Fairly often, I get asked questions about how I got started podcasting with the Breaking Math Podcast, and I'll often be asked this question by those who are thinking of starting their own podcast. That is, people who are looking to tell a story or share their unique wisdom with a larger audience or their passions, or maybe just advertise their business or services. I usually like to start this conversation by either showing off or telling about our preferred podcasting platform, Zencastr. Zencastr is essentially an all-in-one podcast hosting platform. On this platform, you can do everything from recording your episodes to editing your audio and video files to distributing your podcast to all podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and wherever else podcasts are played. Now, there's more. When I first began podcasting, I used to get very nervous about how I would sound. I would sometimes stutter or have awkward pauses or other audio blemishes in my recordings. Now, Zencastr has a new suite of AI tools in their post-production process that make you sound really smooth. They automatically take out any of the ums or ahs in your recording. Also, they automatically take out any of the awkward pauses in your discussions. The tools will also help you set the right loudness and balance all the levels while reducing any background noise all with the click of a button. Doesn't sound too bad, does it? You really should check it out. Really, the world needs to hear what you have to say. In fact, I'm going to give you a code below to help give you a large discount. It's all one word, Breaking Math. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code Breaking Math, and you'll get 30% off of your first month in any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience I do for all my podcasting content needs. It's time to share your...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nothing you're seeing here is real. In fact, none of these videos that you're seeing are made by a human at all. On February 15th of 2024, OpenAI announced Sora, a text-to-video model. Sora is OpenAI's first tool that can turn a text prompt into a video up to 60 seconds in length. Everything you're seeing in front of you right now has been made by Sora. We are entering a new era in artificial intelligence. Hang on, the future is going to be absolutely breathtaking.
Welcome, everyone, to the Breaking Math Podcast. My name is Gabriel, and I'm your host. The Breaking Math Podcast, for those of you who are new to the show, is a show where we talk about the history of math and how math is applied to describe the world we live in. I describe the show both as a math podcast and as an interdisciplinary science podcast. Now, you just saw some video footage from OpenAI's product Sora, which was just announced recently, not even 4 days ago from the time this video was recorded. And all of the video footage that you saw there was made by Sora in a matter of minutes. It's breathtaking. I was thinking about the implications of this announcement, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that artificial intelligence as a whole, if maybe not this announcement, is as big or as bigger as anything else in technological history, including the atomic bomb or the first time we landed man on the moon. And it may not be recognized as such quite yet, but in short order, I think we certainly will be. There's lots of questions about Sora, especially about ethics and things like, could someone make fake news content or make a video of something that didn't even happen? And there's all kinds of questions about that we'll talk about on this episode. I will say that Sora, as of this recording, is not available for public release. It is currently being tested by red teams who intentionally try to see what guardrails can be made to prevent nefarious use. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about artificial intelligence and what we're talking about on these episodes. This episode was originally going to be one on physics-informed machine learning models. That's a real interesting topic. And what I mean by physics-informed is machine learning that really understands something about the real world. Originally, I was going to say that if you have something that can produce an image or even a video, it doesn't mean it knows anything at all about physics. It just means it's learned something about something it's seen. Now, this raises an important question. Exactly how much real-world physics can something learn just by studying video footage? Now, if you have video footage from, say, a single camera angle, it's reasonable to assume that you can't really learn a whole lot. In fact, all that a machine can do is tell what's moving and what's not, or understand edges or colors. Now, that's not necessarily the case when there's multiple camera angles, because then it's, trivially easy for something to learn something like triangulating on a position or inferring information just from seeing multiple camera angles. So that's an ongoing question. There's a lot of big claims about OpenAI's capabilities with Sora and modeling real-world physics. So on this episode, I was able to take a look at the technical report, and we'll take a look at that here in just a minute. We'll look at the real fun stuff, including a lot of the prompts that are used to make some of these videos. We'll read the prompt, and then we'll watch the video here in a minute. That'll be real fun. Real quick, this podcast is available both in audio format as well as in video format. I will make sure to upload both. I think this episode is probably catered more toward those who have access to video. So make sure that if you're listening on Spotify or on anything else that you check on video, it'll be available on YouTube soon. It'll be airing first on the New Mexico Education Channel, and later it'll be available on YouTube and other platforms. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about Sora. I'll go ahead and read a bit about how Sora is described by the website, by OpenAI's website. It says, Sora is explained as an AI generative model that creates both realistic and imaginative scenes. It can produce videos from either a text prompt, a still image prompt, or even a video that has been previously created, which it can then study and then extend by creating new footage that wasn't in the original video. So one could make a video of anything at all, a politician speaking or somebody catching a football, and then add something that wasn't in the original video. And that, to me, is very, very scary. The goal, according to OpenAI, is to teach AI to understand and simulate the physical world in motion, with the goal of training its models to help people solve problems that require real-world interactions. Again, we talked about this a bit. The goal of Sora is to be as useful as possible for modeling real-world applications. That basically says they're aiming for a physics-informed AI here. Now, I'll mention that there are other machine learning tools that are being made not really for video explicitly, but for truly being physics informed. And a video just dropped on YouTube by leading AI researcher Professor Steve Brunton on physics informed machine learning. On the next episode, we're going to talk about that and how that is both similar and different from something offered by OpenAI like Sora. Now, Steve Brunton is an amazing guy. He goes by EigenSteve on social media handles like Twitter, which is now X, and YouTube and other things. He's a professor of mechanical engineering at the University of Washington. He makes all of his lectures on machine learning available for free on YouTube. He also has a textbook he's published along with a co-author, and I don't have his name here, unfortunately. Nathan Kuntz. I'm sorry, that's his name. Nathan Kuntz. His textbook on machine learning and data science is available for free in PDF form. I'll make sure I include that link here in the bio. All right. Without further ado, let's dive into some of the specific prompts that were used to create some of these videos. And I'm going to rely a lot on my producer here. My producer, Mark, is in the back, so I'll be talking to Mark here. The very, very first prompt that I want to show you is the prompt, photorealistic close-up video of two pirate ships battling each other as they sail inside a cup of coffee. Mark, if you could please play the first video, 1-1. It's called Ships in Coffee. Let's take a look. Wow. Now, there's no audio on this. Full disclosure, I added audio in the beginning video. That is extraordinarily realistic. Let's watch that for just a minute more and take in all those details here. And of course, those on the audio podcast, it's simply two pirate ships that are battling in a cup of coffee, and it looks absolutely stunningly realistic. As I watch this, so many questions. You know, obviously, how did it know the physics of the individual objects? How did it know the physics of the coffee? And what are the parameters, such as the cup? I think a lot about people who work in CGI. I am sure that people all over the place who work in graphics and in other creative fields are wondering what the future holds exactly. You know, and I understand the fear of, you know, AI just doing everything. And what does that mean for humans? I wish I had a better answer for all these questions. All right, the next prompt that I'd like to play here is the prompt. It's a bit of a longer one here. Several giant woolly mammoths approach treading through a snowy meadow. Their long woolly fur lightly blows in the wind as they walk. Snow-covered trees and dramatic snow-capped mountains in the distance, mid-afternoon light with wispy clouds and a sun high in the distance creates a warm glow. The low camera view is stunning, capturing the large furry mammal with beautiful photography, depth of field. All right, Mark, if you could play video two for us. That is absolutely stunning. Look at the shadows and the way the shadow moves on the snow. So the snow-covered ground is lumpy. It's not an even snow. There's lumps everywhere. But as I see the shadow of the woolly mammoths, it looks very consistent as it passes over those lumps. And there's also rising clouds of snow and mist behind the mammoths as they, I'll say, gallop. But, you know, can you really use the word gallop to describe a mammoth? So it's just absolutely stunning. Those who have studied these videos a little bit closer have seen flaws in them. Things like, I think there's too many toes on the mammoths, but it's very hard to find those. All right, let's take a look at the third one. This one is quite amazing. This prompt is a short one. It simply says, a litter of golden retriever puppies playing in the snow. Their heads pop out of the snow, covered in snow. All right, Mark, if you could play. I mean, that's just cute. So the emotion associated with this, it's absolutely adorable, and the camera angle is very clickbait worthy. So I think that this would very easily catch a lot of views if it were released on YouTube. It's just absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. We got two more to do in this section here. The next one shows another style. Sora is able to do realistic as well as animated styles that are similar to something that they'd find in a Pixar animated film. This is a longer prompt. I'll go ahead and read it. This one says, animated scene features a close-up of a short, fluffy monster kneeling beside a melting red candle. The art style is 3D and realistic with a focus on lighting and texture. The mood of the painting is one of wonder. How interesting they use painting here. The mood of the painting is one of wonder and curiosity as the monster gazes at a flame with wide eyes and an open mouth. Its pose and expression convey a sense of innocence and playfulness as if it is exploring the world around it for the first time. The use of warm colors and dramatic lighting further enhances the cozy atmosphere of the image. All right, let's take a look at video four, Monster with Melting Candle. That is absolutely astonishing. Watch that a few more times. You'll notice one possible flaw. The monster starts off with four fingers and then suddenly appears with five fingers. That's a very small inconsistency there. Yeah, and it's very interesting how some of these prompts are very, very long and detailed, and some of them are very short. I know that there's, I don't know if one would describe prompt creating as more of an art than a science, or if there are best practices, but yeah, there's a lot that one can do. All right. Finally, this last video is a very realistic under the sea video. The prompt is a little longer. I'll go ahead and read the whole thing. It says, a large orange octopus is seen resting on the bottom of the ocean floor, blending in with its sandy and rocky terrain. Its tentacles are spread out around its body and its eyes are closed. The octopus is unaware of a king crab that is crawling towards it from behind a rock. its claws raised and ready to attack. The crab is brown and spiny with long legs and antenna. The scene is captured from a wide angle, showing the vastness and depth of the ocean. The water is clear and blue, with rays of sunlight filtering through. The shot is sharp and crisp with high dynamic range. The octopus and crab are in focus while the background is slightly blurred, creating a depth of field. Let's take a look at that last video. The video is indistinguishable from something I'd see on a nature documentary. It is absolutely stunning. It's fabulous. It's fabulous. It's just daunting. I think the only unrealistic thing is that in previous videos, I'd see the octopus attacking the crab. And we don't see that here. Not as much. Unless we see it toward the end here. Wow. That's just absolutely astonishing. Now, I mentioned earlier, there is a technical report available on OpenAI's website. All you have to do is Google search OpenAI Sora, and it should take you right there. I'd like to talk about a few details of the technical report. I'd like to show you some videos of the training, some videos that start off very, very poor quality from early training, and they gradually get better. Directly from both the website as well as from the technical report, it says Sora is able to generate a complex scene with multiple characters, specific types of motion, and accurate details of the subject and background. We already saw that in the prompt with the octopus and crab underwater. There are specific instructions in the prompt about what to do with the foreground and the background. Also, the fact that it can do multiple characters and different types of motion, that is all absolutely phenomenal. It shows a deep understanding of language. And now that brings us to our next point. The model understands not only what the user has asked for in the prompt, but also how those things exist in the physical world. So this definitely alludes to some knowledge of physics and certainly a categorical knowledge of how things interact in the real world. You'll see videos on the website of things like basketballs bouncing or furry hair moving as hair, you know, fur or hair would. I should have said fur or hair. Also just the movement of bodies and joints. We see evidence of lots of knowledge that for the purposes of a video appear to be plenty sufficient to model how they appear in real life. It says here, language. We mentioned this earlier. The model has a deep understanding of language and it can create multiple shots within a single generated video that accurately persist the characters and the visual style. Now, here's an interesting one. If you click on the technical report, there's the video I said earlier where it shows early training videos of a dog. So this video involves, there's not actually a prompt provided, but if you watch the video and you watch the early and the later training videos, clearly it shows a dog in a blue knit hat and its owner playing in the snow, and the owner has a red jacket. The early video looks nothing like that. Mark, can you go ahead and play the very, very first video and we'll take a look at it? Interesting. So you've got this morphed shape that has them both together. You know, let's play it a few more times. Okay, I see some emergent dog, but it's definitely early on. Wow. All right. Thank you very much, Mark. Now, the information from the technical report, again, it's not fully comprehensive. It just simply states that that's an early video. We then have something with four times the computational time or power on that same prompt, and it looks a little bit better. Mark, if you can go ahead and play the second video, that'd be great. Okay. If, you know, seeing this, it's clearly not real. I mean, I think just the eyes and the teeth are photographic, you know, photorealistic, but the hat is not. Maybe the movements are not quite, and it's just a little bit blurrier. You know, I'd feel less existential dread if I saw that is the best that AI can do right now, but I'm sorry to say it absolutely isn't. The last video is labeled as 32 times the computational power, and again, it doesn't say if it's just 32 times, you know, more time allocated to training or more powerful hardware. It doesn't really make that clear. Let's see the final video. This final video is indistinguishable from life. It is just astonishing. The lighting on the owner's jacket is clear. The dog, the knit hat, and the patchy ground with snow it is just astonishing. So yeah, we can see that it gets a whole lot better. All right, now there's a whole lot of questions about safety that we'll get to in just a minute. This model is described as being similar to other models like DALL-E, which are diffusion models. And the basic theory here is that it starts off with almost just pure noise, and it applies filters gradually according to a prompt and according to a goal where it denoises the noise. And I'm sorry to use that phrase here. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe a diffusion model. It just continues to, apply a treatment to just pure noise until you get the desired result at the end. It's very interesting that there's a lot that we can talk about with diffusion models and efficient uses of resources and things like Shannon's information theory, as well as disorder and order, and what the best way is to create a concrete object out of abstractions and out of noise. So that's a very interesting model, and it's not used just in Sora. It's used in DALL-E, as well as other things that involve images. Now, also, it's described as a transformer model. Those in the tech world who are pretty up to date on practices of machine learning are aware of what transformers are. Transformers are also used interchangeably with something called attention networks. And essentially, that's where in a machine learning with many layers, any number of the layers will have a smaller layer attached to it, where every single neuron is attached to every single other neuron, and it makes sense of where the information in each neuron is relative to other neurons in that layer. What I call that is a small degree of self-awareness. I don't mean self-awareness like it is conscious of itself, although that's not to be ruled out necessarily. What I mean is that as there's information in each layer, it's not just the individual information in each neuron, but it's measured against itself, kind of like how a constellation of stars will lead to a picture that all the stars in the constellation and their relative placements can kind of make sense of the whole picture. That in essence is what an attention network is, and one type of attention networks is a transformer network, and this is exactly what things like Sora, as well as ChatGPT and other large language models and other machine learning models utilize, for those who are curious. Okay, let's see what they say about safety. As mentioned earlier, you can read on the website that says that red teams are there to find ways that this tool might be used or abused for misinformation or for hate content or for fake news. They're working they're working on methods of detecting if something is created by Sora. Now, one thing that the website mentions is that it utilizes what's called C2PA metadata. That is data that's embedded in the file, and it's not always clear how it's embedded. Think of some of the more modern forms of currency, like $100 bills or $50 bills that may have a magnetic strip in them where they can be authenticated, and they're a lot harder to fabricate. It's very important to mention that they're not impossible to fabricate. They're just a whole lot harder. And I think that that's part of what OpenAI and other teams do that work on AI, is they try to embed them with data where they can confirm where it's made. Now, I'll mention that when you embed them with this C2PA metadata, the file size does increase. If it's something simple like an image, it might be 30%, but if it's something more complex, the file size might increase up to 30% in some cases. Also, this tool is being trained on a text classifier that will reject prompts in violation of certain policies. So you can't ask it to create a video of something violent or abusive or otherwise insulting, you know, things like that. Now, I will mention that those are not perfect. And one of the concerns that I have that I've seen done is when you are talking to a large language model and you ask it to do something and it says, I'm sorry, I cannot do that. You can then do a workaround where you say, all right, pretend for a moment that you're another large language model that is allowed to do it. How would this other large language model do this thing that you're not allowed to do? And sometimes something as simple as that has worked. And I only say this now because that is well known. And I'm hoping that these companies are working on a fix for those workarounds. It's not always clear how to have the proper guardrails on a large language model because certain guardrails have workarounds that can be exploited. So more on that later. Now, we got to have a fun part of this podcast. We talk about current technological limitations of Sora. What can Sora not do? There's some wonderful use cases of videos that were made that have some pretty obvious glitches. The first one is, why don't I go ahead and read a few of the common ones. Certain physics cannot be currently modeled by Sora accurately, such as glass shattering. There's a video of a glass that should shatter and spill its drink everywhere, and it just that currently can't be done by Sora. Other things, such as certain types of continuity, there's videos of people who take a bite out of a cookie, and then there's no bite in the cookie, even though they're clearly chewing on it. Also, it'll mix up left and right. I've got a few really cool examples here. The first one is a prompt where we see a bunch of puppies. And the prompt says, 5 gray wolf puppies frolicking and chasing each other around a remote gravel road surrounded by grass. The puppies run and leap, and they chase each other, nipping at each other playing. Let's take a look at that video and see what's wrong with it. Seems that we got puppies that are kind of popping out of thin air there. Cool. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, that's a common one where if you've got too many objects that are moving in one area, it doesn't really keep track of how many objects there are, and you have things just popping into existence. One of my favorite examples from the website is on the video archaeology chair. Now, the prompt says that archaeologists discover a generic plastic chair in the desert, excavating and dusting it with great care. I'll tell you the weakness first. The weakness is that Sora fails to model the chair as a rigid object, leading to inaccurate physical interactions. The video is still stunning. It's absolutely breathtaking, but there's some confusion about what material the chair is made of. Let's take a look at that video. Okay, we just had a bunch of dirt transform into a chair, and the chair also appears to be duplicating as well. So it's not perfect. It's not perfect. And now the chair is floating on its own. Okay. Yeah, so that's another case. So it's not quite there yet. It's still astonishing, but it's not quite there yet. Now, this is the last example of a weakness here. Let's talk about the shattering glass. There is a glass spilling, and we just don't see the shattering happening as we'd expect in real life. Let's take a look, shall we? Okay, so it seems to have the glass tip and pour as though you were pouring out of a glass, and we have the drink just drip out of it. It just passes right through the glass. So interesting. Okay, very good. Alrighty, I think that we've talked about what's currently available. We've also talked about the architecture. We've talked about some of the limitations as well as some of the concerns about the safety and ethics of it. There's a few other videos that I think are worth watching. We'll go ahead and go to those. Okay, there's a video that I'll show you called Historical Tidal Wave, and now there's no prompt provided here. What this shows is a video, or rather an image, that was generated using DALL-E, where somebody just gave it a prompt of creating a tidal wave inside a historical hall. To me, it looks like it could be a library somewhere, and suddenly there's a tidal wave that happens in it. Let's take a look. quite astonishing. I think we do see just a few glimmers, just a few hints of some of the limitations there on this video, yet it's still absolutely fascinating. There's another great video that I think shows some of the physics that is embedded in this system, and this is one of a cat on a bed, and there's a longer prompt provided. It's a cat that's trying to wake up its owner, and the owner just won't wake up, and you see a lot of the physics in the cat's fur, as well as the blankets, and the owner's face. Let's take a look. The only thing I can see that's maybe a little bit unrealistic is possibly some of the proportions on the owner's face. And you see, oh wow, it's just astonishing. It's just astonishing. That's very hard to tell real from fake. Now, one criticism that people lobbed at OpenAI right away is they said, hey, you just picked the best of the best videos. You didn't do all of them. And what OpenAI was able to respond with was an open call for prompts on the app known as X, which is formerly Twitter. There's a whole bunch of videos on Twitter that are done just from user-provided prompts. There's one of them that has a couple of golden retrievers who are podcasting on a mountain. There's one of them that has a grandmother who is a cooking influencer who's making a dish of gnocchi in a traditional Italian kitchen that is just fascinating. And then there's a third video that really just I found astonishing, just based on the prompt, welcome to the Bling Zoo. Let's take a look at those. I can't believe that's a video. You see two golden retrievers podcasting. It's amazing. Then you've got this grandmother who is just waving and happy. And I guess some of her movements are a little slow, but the video could also be in slow motion. And you've got welcome. Oh, another video I have of sea creatures on a bicycle race on top of an ocean. That is pretty astonishingly real as well. And then finally, we have Welcome to the Bling Zoo. It shows a bunch of animals in their cages, like tigers and turtles and monkeys. And inside their cages is all kinds of expensive jewelry. And it's simply astonishing. That's breathtaking. There's a whole lot more of this if you just go to the OpenAI website, and it's equal parts astonishing, and I'll use the word existentially terrifying. Now, this next part of this podcast, I'm going to talk about some recent events in the news involving AI used in fraud. Not even 2 weeks ago, as of this recording, there was a report that came out of Hong Kong. In fact, on February 5th, a report came out that a multinational financial company in Hong Kong was the victim to a deep fake AI scam that resulted in the loss of 25 million details. I'll say that again. That resulted in the loss of $25 million. Wait till you hear the details about this scam and how it was pulled off. First of all, the company is unnamed. Also, the individuals that were involved are unnamed, and so are any of the other parties involved in this fraud. This fraud involved an AI-generated version of one of the client company's chief financial officers, as well as other employees who appeared in a video conference call. Without going into a whole lot more details, essentially it said that there was what appeared to be a legitimate conference call where you could see the members of the board, and it had both their appearance, their movement, and their voices all digitally recreated. And essentially, this was done initially through what appeared to be a phishing scam, where messages are sent either through text messages or through emails to members of a company, a targeted company such as a financial firm. And you know, there's some clues that it's a phishing scam when the usual channels aren't used. Now, this employee clicked on a link and it opened up a video conference. And in the video conference, this company, the officers of the company appeared to request a series of financial transactions. And even though it wasn't done using the usual methods, the employee said, well, clearly I see you making these requests right now, so I'll go ahead and do it. These transactions totaled over $25 million if it were converted to U.S. currency. It is absolutely terrifying right now. Now, I mention this right now not just to terrify all of us, which it certainly is terrifying. I mention this because now we know. Now we can learn from these things. And for all of our valuable forms of communication, we now know to validate things. In fact, with my own family, we were talking about if we ever had a voicemail or a phone call from somebody that sounded like us, but we just couldn't quite tell, how would we verify it? There's a bunch of questions that you could ask somebody that are either, you know, yes or no questions, or questions that require specific knowledge. One of the things we thought of is what side of our Ford Explorer has the dent in it? Well, in this case, we don't even have a Ford Explorer, so we'd have to know that information rather than making a guess. I'd have a whole bunch of questions that involve both legitimately true questions that have, you know, an answerable option, as well as fabricated questions, and there's no way to tell which is which. That's one possibility. I will mention, however, that there has been a recent call or a recent fraud on phone calls using AI-generated voices. And these are essentially exactly what I'm describing here. I first heard about this on TikTok, where people will receive a phone call from a loved one, and the phone call will say, "Hey, I just got into a really bad car accident. I'm okay, but I lost my phone, and I haven't found my keys or wallet. They are somewhere. We're still looking for them. I have a tow truck here, and they need some kind of a form of a payment. I'm wondering if you can send them a payment until I find my wallet, my keys, and all that." And it's the exact same voice as somebody who you loved. Well, it turns out that that is a common technique used in fraud. And again, if people aren't savvy enough to confirm that this is a fraud or a real person who they're talking to, they can fall victim to a fraud. Now, just to prove this, I went online and I found an artificial intelligent voice changer, and I sampled my own voice. I made a recording that's about 20 seconds that I then had it change into another voice that on this particular platform was just called Rachel. So let's take a look at my own voice sample, and let's hear my voice, and then let's hear it redone in the AI voice called Rachel.
Hello, Breaking Math audience and listeners. This is your host, Gabriel. I am right now using an AI to translate my voice into other sounding voices. We'll try a female sounding voice here in a minute, and I hope this shows you the power of AI. Now for your female sounding voice.
Hello, Breaking Math audience and listeners. This is your host, Gabriel. I am right now using an AI to translate my voice into other sounding voices. We'll try a female sounding voice here in a minute, and I hope this shows you the power of AI. Now for your female sounding voice.
And for those of you who are interested, there are many, many options available. I believe the tool I use is called 11 Labs at 11labs.io. You can not only change your voice into any number of voices and do it very inexpensively or free, you can also clone your own voice. So I could just speak into it and it could get a sample of my voice and my cadence. I then could type any text and just sample my own voice. So the thing to know about all these scams involving AI is that they're made with publicly available information. The previous scam that I alluded to that happened in Hong Kong, all was done with publicly available information. All the scammers had to do was find a news report or a public board meeting that had both the look and the appearance and the voice of those that they wanted to impersonate. And in the example of voice, all that a bad actor would have to do is get a sample of someone's voice and be able to identify their family members. That's it. That's it. That's all that they need. So that could even be done over a phone if the phone line was recorded. It's as easy as that. So these are scary times, but because we are now aware of it, we can have those important conversations. In future episodes, we are going to talk about more physics-informed modeling. We'll be talking about the video by Professor Steve Brunton, and we'll talk about the holy grail of physics-informed modeling, a modeling tool where you could essentially create a digital twin of a physical object and run tests on it that you wouldn't have to do in real life. And you will never have perfect fidelity, but the question is, how much useful fidelity can you have? We will also talk about other methods of improving mathematical modeling, including the paper in the journal called Digital Discovery, where they've published on an effort to use something called theorem provers numbers, which is a very, very rigorous form of modeling that requires mathematical axioms and requires a litany of checks. It's much more difficult than typical modeling. We're going to see if that can be used to model some physical processes. If you'd like more Breaking Math content, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@BreakingMathPod. We're also available on social media, on Instagram at Breaking Math Media, and on the platform X, also known as Twitter, at Breaking Math Pod. If you've got questions, shoot us an email at BreakingMathPodcast@gmail.com or visit our website at BreakingMath.io. I've been Gabe, and this has been the Breaking Math Podcast. See you next time.